Are you ready to go?
I'm as ready as
I am. I'm just itching to get done, and I'm not sure why. What's up? This is Movies On Up. It was the perfect crime, except someone saw it all. My perfect co-host seated right across from me, as per usual, Mr. Dave Baselis.
I see it all.
That's Mr. Dave. He sees it all. He hears much less. I am Ryan. We are Movies On Up. It was the perfect crime, except someone saw it all, is the perfect tagline for this week. If you think you know what movie that comes from, send your guess to us in one of the three following ways. You can email us, moviesonup@gmail.com. You can leave your guess on our Facebook page, facebook.com/moviesonup, or you can tweet your answer at us, @moviesonup on the Twitter. If you are correct, and if we choose you, we will send you a gift, which is our prize pack. Wonderful Movies On Up prize package.
Yes. Just glorious Movies On Up prize package.
Wonderful, glorious, whatever superlatives we generally use.
It's the most wonderful gift package of the year.
Right. It is absolutely worth all of those superlatives. There are probably a couple superlatives. Wonderful, excellent, gripping, all of which could involve Joel Edgerton's 2015 The Gift. You might be thinking, is there a Joel Edgerton movie that comes out this week? Perhaps, but it is December. It is the month of giving, and what better gift could we give our listeners than a podcast dedicated solely to Joel Edgerton's feature directorial debut? Joel, of course, being a pod favorite of my co-host.
I do enjoy Joel Edgerton.
Certainly. He, like, earns that. It's not just like a, it's awesome, we like Channing Tatum now, who does entertaining things, but yeah. Joel Edgerton's like wonderfully talented in everything he does.
He's one of those that he's going to bring it no matter what he does. And everything he's been in, it's intense. Like no matter what he's doing, it's intense. And then he's also a very gifted screenwriter. And it was cool to see him as a director for his feature length debut.
Yeah, I mean, he pulled the hat trick in this one. Wrote, directed, and starred in the aforementioned 2015's The Gift. Starred opposite Jason Bateman and another one of Dave's favorites, Rebecca Hall. We'll probably get into her a little bit later. It did open in third place August 7th of 2015 with $11.8 million behind Mission Impossible, Rogue Nation's $28.5 million. Josh Trank's Fantastic Four in its opening week, of course, with $25.6 million. It fell off precipitously after that. Vacation and Ant-Man round out your top five that week with $8.9 and $7.9 million, respectively.
Are you looking at the budget? This couldn't have been more than a $10 million movie.
No, I actually didn't look at the budget. But even at almost $12 million, I think it ended up being the second biggest Blumhouse release that year. Which is not saying a ton, but Blumhouse movies, they make money. They're made on a, I think The Gallows came out that year, which cost maybe $1 million to make. It was super tiny budget. Didn't make what The Gift made, but it still did pretty well at the box office. And I'm sure The Gift followed that similar formula. I think there was one of those Supernatural sequels just beat it in terms of Blumhouse releases for that year. It did go on to gross $43.7 million domestically, which puts it at number 1,767 on the all-time list, just behind the Mandy Moore, John Krasinski rom-com.
Oh, what was that one called?
Featuring the dearly departed Robin Williams.
Something wedding.
Yeah, close.
They're getting married
they
and he's
are.
Like the...
He's the priest.
Oh, what is that called?
Trying to get him a license.
Oh, License to Wed.
License to Wed. There it is. And just ahead of the 2007 Jason Lee voiced live action superhero reboot of... Old ass cartoon. They did a live action version. But Jason Lee did not appear because he played...
Underdog?
Underdog. Underdog. Yes, Underdog from 2007. Just to give you some other lurkers around the 1700s. 1719 was Spotlight from last year.
Best picture winner-ish?
Yeah. Did pretty well at the Oscars. Not as well at the box office. Midnight Cowboy, one of my favorites, rides in at 1732 and at 1786. And I was a little surprised at this. A little film about a great big bromance starring Keanu Reeves, Gary Busey, Point Break. Yeah. 1786 for Point Break. I guess that movie just found its audience.
Yeah.
Much later.
Little $5 million budget for The Gift. So it more than doubled that budget opening weekend and almost nine times it by the time it was done.
So I'm kind of surprised it hasn't already been greenlit for a sequel.
I don't want a sequel. Like, that's what I don't like about this is, but give Edgerton something. Like, I don't think he has anything else lined up right now to direct.
Directing, I don't think so. I mean, he wrote Jane Got a Gun. He was given some writing credits on that.
And he was in it for,
he was.
He was the one that stayed.
Yeah. He was, I guess, the second lead in that. He wasn't Jane. He was the other cowpoke in that movie. At least for the discussion of this movie, you know, it does really begin and end with Edgerton. Like we mentioned, the guy is supremely talented. And if you're wondering, well, okay, this is a good one to check into because you'll see how gifted he is as an actor. But then when you consider that he also wrote what I think is a fairly original story.
Yeah. I think so.
And he was able to direct it as well. It really does show that, I mean, the guy is, to use a term that gets probably overused, is a triple threat. It was the first one of his written projects to get a major U.S. release. He did that movie over
Felony with Jai Courtney and Tom Wilkinson.
Yes, that was over in Australia. But this was his first writing effort to get a major U.S. release and his first feature, all rolled into one, and he did not disappoint.
No, you say original, but it's one of those that it's hard to really sum up. I've often said, like, I like movies where the setup is a bunch of people go to a dinner party because you can go anywhere from it. On paper, I don't think this movie stands out because it's just new married couple run into a weird guy. But there's a lot more to it than that. And he does a great job of letting it kind of unfold and you never really know. And then the payoff, I think, is one of the most brutal payoffs ever. Like, we'll get into it, but I generally will try to rewatch movies when we do episodes, especially if I like the movie. I did not rewatch this one because I don't think I can watch this movie again. The payoff is so unsettling and disturbing, but brilliant. It just, the way it's set up is so well executed.
And we'll pay that off later as we get to it, I'm sure.
That's the tease.
If you're listening now, you've either already watched the movie, so you know what the payoff is, so we're not really giving you any consternation there. Or if you haven't watched the movie yet, again, pause the podcast.
We're
going
to spoil
the
ending here in a little
bit. Oh, well, yeah. Ending's hard to spoil.
We're going
to
say what happened.
We're going to do our best to spoil the ending. We talked a little bit earlier on in the month in our Krampus episode about pacing and how Doherty did a great job with pacing in that movie. This movie is sort of a slowish burn that certainly doesn't take that long to put all three of our characters together. We meet Gordo about 3 minutes in and things progress nicely from there. It never feels like it drags at any point.
No, it doesn't. And a lot of that comes to Bateman, I think, because Jason Bateman is so charismatic and charming. He's not the typical Bateman in this movie. He's not Michael Bluth. He's not cracking jokes. He's not super likable. He's not the kind of guy you really want to hang out with, but he's so damn compelling on screen that he's easy to watch, and there's enough going on and there's enough left unsaid, I guess. Like, things happen and they're not spelled out, so even if there is a lull until the next time, you're still trying to figure out kind of what you just saw. So the time goes fast.
It goes fast. And if you think about really the arc of where we meet these characters, when they all three come together there in the furniture shop, it's fairly innocuous. And then where it ends from there is anything but. Like you said, it's hard to describe this movie as, okay, it's people go to a dinner party in X, or like it's Die Hard on whatever. But I guess it would be along the lines of something like a Fatal Attraction. I guess you have really no idea when you sit down, when you first meet these three characters, number one, what they all have. And obviously, you know that Simon and Robin are married, but you don't know how Gordo works into that. You certainly don't know where it's going to go from there. But I don't think at any point you're really tapping your feet like, come on, come on, come on, let's get to it.
It's unveiled nicely. Like, you get to, okay, how Gordo and Bateman know each other. Then some history unfolds, and then some other history about Bateman unfolds. And it's a character study. Like, when you talk about, there's no character development rushed here. Like, you get to know these characters over this time because they're put in real situations. Bateman and Rebecca Hall just moved there. They're in this scenario where they have friends that are bi. There's the job involved. She's staying at home. They're trying to have a baby. Like, all these things feel real, and you're with them in the whole step of the way. And I think one of the things that Edgerton did so well was he took kind of the Hannibal Lecter approach to his character.
Certainly.
Because Gordo, he wrote and directed this movie, but to say he's the star of it is a little misleading, I think, because his screen time is actually kind of limited. Like, he's not on screen a lot, but when he's not on screen, he's the topic being talked about. He's the topic being researched. There's a lot going on with him, and he's very effective even when his character isn't on the screen.
I think you brought up a good point. Who is this movie about? It is not about Gordo, and it's not told from his perspective. The movie is from the point of view of Simon and his wife. I mean, he's not in every scene, and neither is she. But it's certainly on those two. And by focusing on those characters, it kind of lets you see that even Simon and Robin have kind of their own demons. Robin pops pills, and turns out Simon's just kind of a shitbag. The shitbaggery is not unveiled all at once. It kind of goes in steps, like building blocks of shit. Throughout the movie, it seems, you know, like we like Simon less and begin to side more and more with Gordo until you get to the end of the movie and you're left with a real Sophie's Choice between two shitbags.
Well, and that's where it...
That's a first.
Yeah, we talk about the payoff, and we'll tease that ending again. It's like, it almost feels like trance in a way, where this whole movie you're thinking, oh, this is the bad guy. But as time goes on, not to spoil trance for a future episode,
Rosario Dawson gets totally naked.
Oh, total bush. But as time goes on, it's like, oh, well, maybe this good guy isn't that good of a guy. He just wants to portray himself like that. And then right when you think, like, oh, okay, Gordo's the good guy in this story, nope.
The movie, it kind of swings. You start off totally hashtag Team Simon. Gordo is an absolute nut. He's dangerous. And then when you find out, you know, what Simon had done and continues to do to Gordo.
Then you're Team Gordo, 100%.
Hashtag
give me
Team
the
Gordo.
Stickers.
Right, yeah. I give a lot of credit to the writing and the actors involved. You'd mentioned how Bateman is very good to watch on this. It's a super dark role for him. And he kind of gets to work into it. At the beginning of the movie, we see that Jason Bateman character that we know and we expect. And by the end of the movie, completely new, different Bateman.
And it works. And I think the casting was brilliant. Edgerton let him be Bateman even in this non-Bateman-y role because he is very smug. Like, a lot of Bateman's charisma comes off from, like, a smug feeling. And that's why Michael Bluth works so well, is because he came off as smug but had no reason to be smug. So that smugness kind of works. And at the beginning, it's endearing because everybody loves Bateman. But then time goes on and you realize, like, oh, that smugness is just a mask. Like, that charm is just hiding all this terrible stuff that he does.
And if we know kind of what a Jason Bateman character is, or what it generally is, Edgerton, on the other hand, is kind of an interesting cat, because we expect when he's in the movie that you're going to get a great character. But what is a Joel Edgerton character? Aside from being devastatingly handsome, and even in this movie, he does his best to work against that type, there isn't a really good answer. You're watching Gordo, that character. Maybe he's crazy, maybe he's not, maybe he's a real monster, maybe it's just payback, and maybe it's even warranted. And maybe it was just because he actually wrote the character that he was really able to inhabit his headspace and give you not Joel Edgerton doing this, but give you just Gordo.
Yeah, and I think you could say that about a lot of actors who will probably be at their peak performance in their own written and directed movie. But it's hard to pin that on him because everything he's in, like, you look at Warrior, that performance he gives in Warrior, even Jane Got a Gun, which he wrote, but look at Animal Kingdom, how just the intensity he brings to that role. And then he's in that Tree Kid movie with Jennifer Gardner, where he's just like a dad. You're getting an intense performance no matter what he's doing. It's just the level of intensity and the type of intensity. You can't pick apart and say, like, oh, that's an Edgerton character.
Right. It's hard to say there's no Edgerton character because there's not one type of character. They're all vastly different, but they're all incredible to watch on the screen. And some of the best things to watch in this movie, I think, are the interactions between this complete wild card character in Gordo and Simon, and how they sort of escalate that relationship. And a lot of these, or at least two that I'm thinking of specifically, the escalations happen around these creepily shot dinner parties, first at Simon's and then at quote-unquote Gordo's house. Especially with the first one, the scenes are filmed so tight on the actors. There's no music playing. There's nothing that would provide you any kind of relief from the awkwardness that we're forced to sit right in the middle of and watch these characters. You end up just begging for Simon to say something just to get us the hell out of this situation. It's awkward, it's uncomfortable,
it sucks
and it comes
in.
Across that way.
It sucks you in, and it's realistic, and it's you feel like you're at this dinner party that nobody wants to be at.
Absolutely. You get that feeling, at least from Simon and his wife. I'm never really sure if Gordo's all that uncomfortable, but certainly they sort of are. But then you contrast that relationship where Simon and Gordo are kind of butting heads with the drop-bys that Gordo has with Robin, and you see two completely different dynamics as Robin and Simon both approach Gordo in very different ways, and it kind of lets us as viewers see both sides of Gordo, so it's tough to take a firm stance on him at any point in the movie.
Until the end that we'll get to.
Until the end.
Maybe.
Maybe. We'll definitely get to that. Definitely maybe. But the thing I love about Rebecca Hall and what she did in this movie is it was really important for us as the audience to stay with her. Edgerton shot a couple extra scenes that he had as kind of a coda ending that showed a lot of things from Gordo's side. You got to see that he did, in fact, steal the dog. He was petting it in his actual apartment. You can see just how hard his father tried to kill him. He's got this giant burn that takes up the entirety of his back. Aside from answering some of those questions about the movie, it moves the perspective from Robin and Simon, and that coda ending would have made it Gordo's story, which I think would have lessened the movie. Rebecca Hall was basically the audience in that. She's never quite sure what to think of Gordo, or as the movie goes on, or Simon, and neither are we.
Yeah, and she's that perfect middle road, because right. We talked about it changes. You root for Jason Bateman at the beginning, and by the end you don't. And Gordo, it switches, where she's the one constant, and she's just going through the same thing we are. Like, is this the bad guy, or am I married to the bad
right.
guy? Like, I don't know.
She's trying to figure it out like us. She's given everybody the benefit of the doubt until they stop earning it. She's the audience in that movie, and I think
she's the audience that leaves 5 minutes early.
Well, yeah, maybe if you stay around for those last 5 minutes.
I think her opinion would change, but
yeah, I mean, okay, the ending. The question that the extra scenes don't answer is whether or not Simon's son is actually Gordo's son.
And I think I'm going to sum it up pretty briefly.
Okay.
Because if you didn't watch the movie, we're going to get deep into the ending. And I want you to know exactly what happened the best we can.
Sure.
Bateman and Rebecca Hall are trying to have a kid.
Absolutely.
They can't.
They did, and he lost the pregnancy.
At one point in the middle of the movie, she gets lightheaded and passed out.
Do you think maybe it's from the pills?
It's
she's
from
popping.
The pills, probably. Near the end, they have a baby. She's pregnant. She has a baby. She tells him, I'm moving with my parents. You go be a jerk somewhere else.
Because she's uncovered his shitbaggery.
Yes. So Bateman goes home and he gets a gift, which is a video filmed from the perspective of Gordo going into Bateman's house, drugging Rebecca Hall's drink. Rebecca Hall passed out, and then Gordo kind of kneeling by her, cut. And that was about 9 months ago. That's what happens at the end. That's the gift. That's the ultimate gift, is that's what he gives him. And it's cut off to where, is it just messing with him? Or is that baby Gordo's?
Yeah. And I mean, he even says, like, when he's on the phone with him, it's in the eyes. You know, you got to look at the eyes. And then you see Simon trying to peer into the nursery where Robin's got the baby. And obviously, you're not going to be able to tell. But I think that's what's one of the things that's brilliant about this movie is basically Simon, by telling a lie about Gordo when he was young, really kind of caused a ton of misery in his life, caused his dad to think he was gay and try and burn him alive. He got picked on in school. Not saying that Gordo would have turned out to be the most well-adjusted person, but it certainly didn't help. So basically this untruth, a bit of a mind fuck, if you will, kind of ruined Gordo's life. So he puts together at some point this master plan to do the same thing to Simon. And right along with him, we don't know. You don't know if it is Gordo's kid or if it's not. If I had to press you for an answer, Dave, what would you say?
I don't know, because you do get to know them well enough. And, like, I don't think Gordo was that evil. And she didn't do anything to him. So in my head, I don't think he did, because this is 100% hurting Simon. And he did no harm to her. But I don't know. And that's just terrifying, because what's Bateman going to do? Is he going to the authorities with that tape? Is he going to tell her about it? What does he do? Like, he's going to always have... It reminds me of the Toby Kebbell's Black Mirror episode, which is terrifying. That is one of the worst things I can imagine. And the Black Mirror episode happened much later, so that hurt even more because there was that attachment. But, like, now you have Bateman. Like, what's he do? Does he try to attach himself to this kid and go at it? Like, it's just such a terrifying, brutal payoff. Yeah, it's not a body count. It's not a slasher movie. But it's one of the most unsettling endings to a movie I've ever seen, because you don't know.
It reminds me a little bit of the ending of Seven. What's in the box? Now, granted, you have an idea what's in there anyway. But at any rate, like, you know that's what it is. This, you don't know, like, what was in her box. What was it, Gordo, or was it Simon? But I think it's just as impactful, because that suspense in the last scene builds to the point where Brad Pitt ends up just blowing Kevin Spacey away. And certainly, I think Simon would have taken a shot at Gordo if he could have found him.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm inclined to believe, or to believe the same way you do, that he didn't actually father the child for a couple reasons. I do think that Gordo genuinely cares for Robin, because I think he might see her similarly to, she's a victim of Simon in similar ways that he is. So I don't think he would ever actually do anything that would hurt her. And I also think that if you have any question of whether the kid's yours or not, I mean, you could certainly do a DNA test down the road. You could find out. So at some point, do you want to? That's an entirely different story. But if you get it done, then you know. And if you get it done early, I don't know, like, if you have to wait till the kid's 20 to have that test done. I feel like they don't. Montel, I think, like, you are the baby's father. So I feel like they know early. Especially if they're splitting up. If you're Simon and you find out that kid's not yours very quickly, then, okay, the ruse is up. Or if you find out 5 years, okay, maybe Gordo gets 5 years on him. But I think they put in, and I'm going to call it a red herring, of Gordo's criminal background. He did abduct a minor. He's done some things that might lead you to believe that it's within him to have basically raped Robin.
Yeah, because, I mean, through the movie, like, there's a point where you can't picture Simon doing anything bad, let alone as bad as what he has done.
Yeah.
And he was capable of that stuff. So, I mean, maybe as thrillers go, unsettling is the best word I could think of. It pulls all the right strings for a psychological thriller. It's paced so great, and it leads up to that payoff. That
doesn't really pay off.
Saying,
but...
yeah, that feels like such the wrong word to use. But from a movie standpoint, yeah, it's a payoff. It's been 15 months since I've seen this movie. I watched it once, and I still cringe when I think about that ending. So, yes, this $5 million movie that made 40-some million, and we're talking about 15 months later, like, yeah, I think payoff is the right word.
You don't leave disappointed. There are some movies, maybe Inception, if you don't find out exactly what the ending is, that kind of pissed some people off. But this one, I think there's room for both sides of it. And whatever you think, whether you're convinced he did rape her or you think he's literally just screwing with him, either way, I think it's great.
Oh, it's a fantastic ending.
I'm not saying that Simon deserved to have his wife raped. That would be a bit of a stretch. But he definitely deserved being put through something.
This is the extreme,
yes,
spectrum of
this
something.
This is the nuclear option,
yeah,
of that.
Yeah.
But that in and of itself, because Robin's not a real person, I think you do take some kind of satisfaction in seeing Bateman finally get what's coming to him. As many lives as he's ruined, and at least two in this movie.
In a way, but we also talked about she was the audience in that movie.
Yes.
So, like, I don't want to get boned when I'm passed out, you know? Like, I don't want to take it when I don't want
it. Even if it was by Joel Edgerton.
Yeah. Even if you're rooting against Bateman, I don't think anybody in their right mind can root for Gordo in that situation. No. Think like, oh, I hope he raped her.
No.
And because she's so... She's never
without blame in this.
Yeah, she's without blame. Like, she never veers towards one way or the other. Like, when Simon becomes too much of a prick, she leaves him. So, like, it's hard to... She doesn't deserve... I mean, nobody deserves it.
No.
Nobody deserves that, but...
But if you want to make the argument that, at least in Gordo's mind, perhaps she does, when they do have the audio tape and Bateman's doing the Gordo's wee-wee, she says that she doesn't want him because he's disgusting. She's talking about Simon, but I don't think Gordo realizes that. So at some point, maybe he does put them both in the same boat and say, oh, you know, this guy is a terrible human being. Of course, the woman he married would be equally as terrible. I'm going to devise a plan to fix them both. And maybe he does. I don't know. Hell, I'm not even sure Edgerton knows. But it doesn't matter because I think the movie's great either way.
I don't want to know what Edgerton thinks. I'm sure he has an opinion. I don't want to know it because that's the beauty of this ending, is you don't know. There is no right or wrong answer. It's the kind of movie you can talk about. Unsettling is the word I keep going back to because you can talk about it. Do you want to, though?
It just sort of made me think about it right now because I've seen some articles talking about the new Blade Runner. And I think one of the great things about that ending is even Ridley Scott is not... I think he went out and said he thinks that Deckard is a replicant at the end of that movie. But you don't know. And, okay, now the Blade Runner sequel is 30 years in the future, and those replicants were only supposed to live 4 years. So how would Deckard still be alive if he was a replicant? That debate has gone on for... Jesus, you know, 30 years at this point, but I don't think it doesn't take away from the movie because it's not spelled out for you. And this, to a different degree, I think is the same. I think it's a great ending that you could, I think, have a discussion about and not get anywhere. If I sat between two people, each of which were convinced that he raped her and he didn't, they could each convince me 5 times apiece in the span of an hour.
Oh, yeah. It's something like, I don't think he did, but
I wouldn't be surprised.
I wouldn't be surprised if he did. So this is what I mean when I like, yes, I don't want the gift too, but I want Edgerton directing. I want him to do something bigger. Like, I want to see something with a little bit more at stake because this is a very contained story.
I would not be upset if we just got more things like this from him. It doesn't need to be the
that fate
of the world.
I get that. I'm not saying I want him to direct the
Avengers.
Cyborg movie. That'll never happen. Something with a little bit more. His characters are so good, and I'd like to see him work with a bit of a bigger cast, with a little bit more at stake, because there's that intensity. That's just what you're going to get from Edgerton, no matter what he's doing, is intensity. Because even this movie, it's intense, even when he's not on screen. So I want to see him direct. I'm not saying... I don't want him to go do Warcraft. Like, I don't want a big tentpole, but I want more of him writing and directing.
I don't think we have anything specifically lined up for him to direct or anything announced that he's even writing. The last thing was the screenplay for Jane Got a Gun from this year. But he's a dude that, if he's involved, really from this point out, in any aspect, I'll certainly check it out because I think from his writing, I think the dude knows a good story.
Yeah.
And if he chooses to be involved in something, it's probably because he likes the story, and I may as well. I might too.
I mean, like, even something like Midnight Special. Like, he was great
in
that
movie.
Side by side with Michael Shannon, who brought it. I truly think he'll get a nomination this year for Loving. Like, I think that movie is going to make him a bigger name because I think he's the kind of guy that people recognize when they see him. Cause
oh, that's that guy.
Yeah, he's been in Black Mass, Zero right. Dark 30. Like, he's been in a lot
yeah.
of stuff, but I don't think Joel Edgerton is a name that, like, people know.
Maybe I'm getting this wrong, but I feel like Joel Edgerton has a little bit of, like, Jeremy Renner syndrome before he got nominated. Now I think people know, like, oh, that's not that guy, that's Jeremy Renner.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, he's in 3 major franchises.
Well, right, but before that, I mean, before
yeah,
Clint
he was
Barton,
the guy from Senior Trip.
Right, he was, you know, that guy. Like, I've seen his face before. He's usually playing, like, the partner or the friend, and now he's the dude. And I certainly think that after Loving, where he is the dude. I think that we're going to see a lot more of that specifically from Edgerton. And I would love to see him do some more writing and directing as well. It's not like out of the ordinary for people to like do really, really well, an actor in their directorial debut. But for him to pull off the hat trick right out of the shoot, I absolutely can't wait to see more stuff from him.
Absolutely.
Let us know if you think Joel Edgerton raped that girl.
Is he gifted?
Is he gifted? Did he gift Robin with a little bastard baby?
Did Edgerton rape that girl? Let us know on Twitter.
Yeah, that's our Twitter poll. Hashtag Team Gordo, hashtag Team Simon. And that'll be who you think the baby belongs to. Or is there a third party?
She could have secrets.
Was it the... No, I was going to say, was it like the neighbor friend from next door?
Allison Tolman's husband?
Yeah, but I'm going to guess not. Because that would have been a mixed baby. And that baby did not look mixed. So... if we're playing Guess Who, like, we could put down that guy's card. But certainly, let us know what you think about the ending of this movie. If you dug it, we hope you did. Sometimes we like to pick out, not that this was necessarily a really small independent movie, but sometimes we like to pick movies that we think people missed, but you'd like it if you went back and saw. And I don't know if we have convinced anybody that hadn't seen this movie to go back and spend an hour and a half watching it.
We did spoil the ending.
We did.
But it's worth it to get there.
But we did tell them to stop. So they could have.
So that's your fault.
Yeah, right. You could have stopped. We would have waited. Digital Dave and Digital Ryan will wait for eternity.
Other spoiler, you didn't get what you wanted for Christmas.
Probably not. Unless you wanted to watch The Gift, in which case you did. The Gift That Keeps On Giving is the month of December. Next week will be our final episode for the year, which is always, or has been at least since we've been doing this show, our, is it fourth annual Uppies?
I think this is the third Uppies.
There is an award that we're giving for the third. Well, there's a couple awards we're giving. The McAvoy Award, that is in its third year. I don't think Worthless Worthington's in its third year.
I think it's only the second for that one.
Yeah. Whatever it is, we always do the
Uppies. Spoiler alert, still not Jai Courtney.
No. Although he's...
Fingers crossed for next year.
He's mounting a case for either of those. Jai Courtney would be the dude that wins them both in the same year.
Next year, he's going to be either the Worthless Worthington or the McAvoy.
He'll find a way to do them both. Or he might win Worthless Worthington, McAvoy the next year. Who knows? That guy's nuts.
He gives it his best, no matter what he does.
He brings it. I don't know what
he brings. His best isn't that great, but he brings it all the time.
He's a hustler, that one. He's a gym rat, I think is what they would call
him. He's an Eric Snow. He's Eric Snow of Hollywood blockbusters. Yeah, he gets the job done, and he's competent.
Kind of.
But if you can upgrade, you probably
will.
You
should, yeah. That's a deep NBA reference to folks outside of Cleveland, Philadelphia, or even Canton, where Eric Snow hails from. We promise we won't get that deep into career backup point guards on our Uppy episodes, but that is one of the more fun episodes to do of the year. It's nice to kind of wrap up the year on that high note of the Uppies, because certainly what we have to start off the year is not exactly a high note.
It's our first ever. We'll tell you what it is next year, next week, next episode.
Oh, so we'll
tease.
That's another tease that'll have to be paid off next week. But until then,
keep it up.